We have spoken to some amazing people on the Spotlight interview over the years. We've had Rod Laver on the program, Greg Norman, some of the world's great swimmers, Mark Spitz, Matt Bionde, our legends, of course, of New Zealand sport as well. This afternoon, motorsport fans, get ready for one of the icons of Formula One, Sir Jackie Stewart, who won three championships, was runner-up twice between 1965 and 1973. He was one of those iconic rock stars with the long hair, the flash glasses, you name it, but also he was a belligerent campaigner for the safety of drivers. We know back in the day it was incredibly unsafe. These things, these Formula One cars, were like death traps. We know we lost our very own Bruce McLaren at the age of 32. So this afternoon we thought we'd cover off every aspect of motorsport, including the own and our own achievements of our New Zealand posse of racers all over the world who are doing great things as well. So Jackie Stewart joins us on the Spotlight interview as we look at a new campaign he's involved with Heineken, a global campaign, If You Drive, You Don't Drink. So Jackie Stewart, an absolute pleasure to have you on the program. When I go through your career, and it's actually similar when I spoke with Greg Norman a couple of years back. So Jackie, I almost feel like you've achieved more post your racing career in terms of driver advocacy and so many other elements of that than what you actually did in the car, if that makes sense. So Jackie.
Well, I think everybody has to move on. You know, just being a racing driver or just being a cricketer or a football player or a rugby player or anything else is a nice thing to be able to do if you get to the top. But there's a lot more to life than just one little period of your many years. I've been lucky enough that motorsport and Grand Prix racing in particular is a great sort of magic carpet, because it takes you into the motor industry, it takes you into to the fuel and oil producers, it takes you into the tire manufacturers, it takes you into companies, for example, like Heineken, who have just joined Formula One in the last few years, the same as Rolex have, and suddenly use people like me in a very positive way to reach out to the enthusiasts. And if you're a track and field athlete, for example, you don't get the same chance to do that, because there's a vest and there's a pair of shorts and a pair of shoes, if you like, in a lot of sports, field sports. Whereas in motor racing, it's a highly commercial world. So somebody like myself, winning the world championship a few times, it's global. That's the other big thing. It's absolutely global, because everybody in the world now seems to drive a car or a motor vehicle of some kind, and therefore there's more focus to it, and it's totally, 20 Grand Prix there are today in 20 different countries.
Amazing.
That, with the biggest television audience that you can think of any sport, by the way, because our year is, there is no season in our year, because we're following the sun everywhere. It's not like soccer or football, as we call it over here. They have a long time off, etc., and the same with cricket and the same with rugby. But motor racing reaches so many more people because the common denominator is a whole lot of people drive cars. There's more people in India and China drive cars now than there are in the United States of America, for example. So it's a big sport, and the so-called stars of it have a better chance of having longer legs, staying longer.
Mate, you've always been, as we know, a staunch campaigner of safety. Even when you see a crash for our own Scotty Dixon a couple of weeks ago at the Indy 500, which was just this remarkable mess at the end of it. In fact, I described he got out, Jackie, of basically that looked like a canoe, not the cockpit of a car. Do you feel a sense of pride that you've been part of that process to keep these guys alive?
Oh, I'm very proud of what I did, because at the time when I started the campaign towards safety, not just of the cars themselves, but specifically many times the racetracks themselves, it really hadn't been thought of. And of course, to some extent, I was much criticized by many people, and particularly track owners, because there was so much that needed to be done, and they just didn't want to spend the money. And if the kitchen's too hot, why don't you just leave it? I didn't want to do that. So therefore, the move that we made in the late 60s and early 70s to where we are today, we probably have got the best safety record of any sport in the world. There's many more people die following or falling off horses, for example, than we have driving, let's say, Formula One cars that are the epitome of the safety example, where the driver is literally sitting in a survival cell. And if you thought about the accident that happened in Australia last year, where Alonso had the huge accident,
yeah,
you could not believe a man could have survived that, and yet he walked out the car because of the hands device that kept his neck from being severed, broken, you know, in a neck position, or his head damaged, or his legs were in that survival cell, and he walked away. So we've come a long way. We've got new space-age materials used. We've got more technology than we've ever had before. Money's being spent on that, and that's passed on down the line, by the way, to the cars we all drive in the street today. They're much safer. They're deformable structures. They're the cockpit of the car, the interior of the car, is much safer than it's ever been before, and that all came from the motor racing initiative, if you like.
Because Sir Jackie Stewart with us out of his base in Switzerland, the part of the reason I raise this is McLaren the movie. I'm not sure, Sir Jackie, if you've seen it yet, but of course we've seen some incredible biopics over recent years. The Ayrton Senna in a documentary was just wondrous. But, you know, we tend to forget, when you look at Bruce McLaren's career and what he did in Formula One and everything else by starting up that team, he died at 32.
Fantastic man, by the way. I mean, Bruce was not only a good racing driver, for me, he was a very good friend. He was one of the first people that looked after me when I was coming up as a little blue-eyed, sort of ambitious young man. I didn't even have blue eyes in those days, and neither do I today, but I was really a new boy in town, and Bruce was very nice to me. Bruce McLaren brought my first Bell helmet from America for me to use, and I was a very proud man to have it. Bruce McLaren was much bigger than even just a driver. To create the McLaren Formula One car and then the Can-Am car that totally dominated the whole sports car Can-Am championship for so many years, and with Denny Hulme following in his footsteps, it was a fantastic example, and that's why we've seen so many good drivers come out of New Zealand since then. But Bruce was a top man. I haven't seen the finished article. Obviously, I did quite a few interviews for it. But he was a gentle giant. He was such a well-mannered man. His father was a hero. It was won the Victoria Cross in World War II, and was another exceptional man who used to come, and the two of them would walk around Denny Hulme, and his father would have no shoes on. They were still walking around with bare feet sometimes.
That's the Kiwi way, Jackie.
A terrific pair. So New Zealand should be very proud of what's happened in motorsport, and Bruce McLaren really started that in a big way, and there's been so many people like Howden Ganley come along since then, and the current Indy team leaders are, you know, there's New Zealanders in there. So Bruce was responsible for making all that happen.
When you lost guys like Bruce McLaren, and there's a famous quote when I was going through getting ready for this interview, Sir Jackie, where you said, when you would leave for the German Grand Prix, you'd pause at the end of your driveway, you'd have a look back and go, will I ever see this again? So what was it like when you were losing not just your competitors, your fellow competitors, but good mates of yours as well? Because back in the day, that's what happened. Guys raced cars and they died.
Well, the Nürburgring was where I would have left that time and looked in the mirror and wondered if I'd ever be back here in this house again in Switzerland at that time. Funnily enough, tomorrow I'm flying up to the Nürburgring to celebrate 90 years since it was first created.
Wow.
And it was a champion racetrack, but impossibly not able to have safety all the way around 23 kilometres or 14.7 miles. With 187 corners in those days, uphill, downhill, narrow racetrack, different surfaces, first trees and grass banks and drop-offs, and, you know, ridiculous on the basis of safety. And myself and my wife Helen counted up one night 95 people that we knew that had always come with us in travels, raced against, came to our home, had dinner with friends, who died over a period of about 5 years.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous. So things had to change. and racetrack safety was the first thing. Then we were developing better cockpit protection and better materials in the cars, like composite carbon fiber instead of aluminium or aluminium, as some people call it. So really, the technology came in, as well as some wisdom, because to begin with, it was a terrible struggle to get racetracks to change, and we had to boycott, for example, two of the greatest racetracks in the world, and I was blamed for that, and there was death threats sometimes. The Nürburgring and Spa-Francorchamps, we had to close because the owners of the track or the organizers would not do one single thing to improve the safety, and we said we can't. We've got to make a statement here, and we banned both of those racetracks. So today, we've got fantastically safe racetracks. We've got protection for the spectators more than we ever had before. The race drivers themselves, there's fewer people. We're not losing very, very people. I mean, I've said recently to one of your colleagues that more people die falling off of horses than they do in top line Formula One racing, for example, by a farmer's mile. So the sport today is extremely safe, but it's still exciting, it's still glamorous, it's still colourful. That's why companies like Heineken have come in and Rolex have come in. And Heineken, by the way, are doing a great job on the racetracks today for the general public, because we never serviced the general public in my day and even until the last couple of years. It was only around the paddock and everything else that where all the money was being spent. Now we're servicing the paddock and trying to induce people not to drink and drive, which is a great statement for a company like Heineken to be making. So the whole progress of motorsport and bringing big multinational corporations in has helped the sport to be better, better facilities, more safety, cars are better, and then now we're trying to make sure people don't drink and drive as street car drivers. And if we can do that in Formula One and use Formula One, that's the type of thing with a global reach that the sport has that we can really make a difference. So it's an exciting time still.
Oh, exactly. So Jackie Stewart with us. So Jackie, the advert itself, which was made by Heineken, boy, it was clever. The way they managed to edit together you back in the day when, by the way, Jackie, you just look like an absolute rock star with that haircut.
Yeah, it was pretty long. The sideburns were pretty long too.
I thought it was the sunglasses as well, mate. Where the hell did you find those things?
Well, they were the Jackie Stewart sunglasses in those days. No, Emerson Fittipaldi and I, the longer we thought we had our sideburns, the faster we went, apparently. And that was the theory, anyway. But they were very glamorous days. Keep in mind, it was the swinging 60s and the 70s. I make a joke, motor racing was glamorous and exciting and colourful, and there was the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the whole thing, but it was very dangerous. In those days, I make the joke, and some people might not like to hear it, that motor racing was dangerous and sex was safe. I reckon that I fixed the motor racing, and I'm blaming some of yours for the other stuff.
But because one of the things I think I love about your career is, so Jackie, obviously you've got the Scottish heritage, obviously you've got a bit of tongue-in-cheek humour about you. The fact that you could talk, the fact that you were, I guess, tough when it came to improving the way driver conditions were, did that help with the fact that you managed to get sponsors on board? Because you look at it now, if you're not good with the media, if you're not good with the corporates, you don't get a gig in Formula One. That's about right now, isn't it?
Yes, you've got to do all of that, but I think sport in general's raised their game in that. But in motorsport, we were privileged enough to have a commodity that was a global commodity, and that's a motor car. And that motor car had to have fuel and oil, and that car had to have tires, and they had to have engines, and therefore the car makers were in, the tire manufacturers were in, the fuel producers were in, and then the big companies from about 1969 properly came into it. And today, the quality of these big multinationals, as you know, because of Heineken and their advert and so forth, they're getting to a bigger audience than we ever had in those past years, because television is so big, social media is so big, and they can reach out to people and make statements, not only bringing their product to the attention of the general public, men, women, young and old, but they're also saying, hey, hang on a second, if you're going to drive, you never drink. And that coming from a company that's totally global and is in the sport, and we can't, as racing drivers, ever, we could never have been drinking and driving, and why should anybody do it on the road? And there's more fatalities, by the way, because of people drinking and driving than we should ever have to have. And here are they campaigning against that evil, if you like, of drinking and driving. So the sport's come a long way since I was in it as a driver, but because I had won the World Championship a few times, and because I, you know, did a lot of television, a lot of media, and worked for people like Ford and Rolex and big multinationals, my name's still up there, and therefore I can still have a role to play, if you like, in the sport all those years ago, because it's more than 40 years since I packed in racing. It's sometimes hard to believe, but for me, that's a reality. And the sport's bigger today than it ever was when I was in there.
So Jackie Stewart is my guest on a Saturday afternoon. He is fronting the campaign You'll See Now, which has been launched in New Zealand by Heineken. Love you, Heineken. When you drive, you never drink. So Jackie, let me ask you a very serious question. How many cheese cutters have you got?
I don't know.
Yeah, but there must be. There must be.
Idea.
There must be hundreds.
Trophies I don't have a lot of. I gave most of them away when I retired to the people who had contributed to my career. I've still got some good ones because Ken Tyrrell, who I used to drive with, put them in his loft. He didn't give them to me, and when he passed away, he gave me the lovely Princess Grace trophy from Monte Carlo, for example, which is probably still the most elegant trophy that's ever been. I've got the Italian Grand Prix, that was the Bandini trophy, which again is a spectacular trophy. And I've got the one over the Nürburgring when I won that a couple or three times. So I've got some trophies, but not that many, as a matter of fact. Not okay. As many as people would think, because I gave a hell of a lot of them away when I thought, well, the sport's ended, how can I thank the people? And giving them Grand Prix trophies were maybe one of the easiest ways to do it.
Okay, let's go through a couple of issues as far as Formula One is concerned. Were you concerned, like a lot of us were a couple of years ago, when the cars started sounding like bumblebees, where Bernie Eccleston was constantly making changes year in, year out? We now know he's moved on, where we weren't seeing overtaking, we weren't seeing the glamorous racing we were used to. Has it done enough to turn all of that around, Sir Jackie?
Oh, yeah. The sport, we were getting bored. In the Schumacher days, for example, when the Ferrari was just so much better than any other car, and any number of drivers could have won with that car, although of course Schumacher was a great driver, at the same time Ferrari bought the best driver in the world at that time. But nevertheless, when there's domination like that, and when Mercedes and Red Bull, for example, Red Bull won the World Championship back-to-back four times, now that became boring, as was it with Mercedes until this year, when suddenly Ferrari have come back and Red Bull are maybe going to chip in a little bit, and if their Renault engine gets a wee bit better, I think they could be up front. So therefore, the sport, of course, is bigger today than it's ever been before. It's now in 20 different countries around the world. It's got more television audience than any other sport, including football or rugby or cricket or American football or baseball. Sometimes these sports are pretty domestic in some places, but
yeah.
Motorsport, because the whole world today is motorized. You know, there's more people drive cars and have got a license in China, for example, than there are in the United States of America, where there's a three-car garage, you know, in their own home. And by the way, India and China are huge, you know, people with cars today. So the whole world is motorized. So therefore, Formula One Grand Prix racing is the sharpest edge of that. And therefore, the drivers like Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel and everybody else at that level that's in there right now are more even global figures than when myself was driving, or Jim Clark or Juan Manuel Fangio and Stirling Moss way before me. So therefore, the sport is bigger. And the social media is bigger, the television is bigger, and there's more major multinational corporations involved. You know, the Heineken Association is a good example of that. And they've just produced a 0.0 Heineken. That means no alcohol. you know, as well as what they do for all of you in Australia and New Zealand and Scotland and England and France and Germany who like a can of beer occasionally. But they've got a non-alcoholic one now because they want to make an example of taking people from being killed on the road by drinking and driving. So all of these things have allowed to happen because the motor vehicles become such an important part of everybody's life, and the television companies, more than anything else on a global basis, are showing with satellite television and cable television every single Grand Prix. And it's not just the length of the Grand Prix, it's the whole bazaar around it. You know, it's a big sport today, and therefore it produces a lot of new talent and a lot of new inventions, particularly in the area of safety.
So, Jackie Stewart, what's your take now on Lewis Hamilton? The reason I ask this is I know you were quoted last year when the whole Nico Rosberg situation happened and guys not following team orders. You called him a ballerina. But then I saw the other week where he was presented with the Ayrton Senna helmet, and I saw for the first time some real emotion from a guy that is often seen as being the show pony of Formula One. What do you make of this guy?
Oh, he's a top driver, absolutely top driver. He and Vettel at the present time, Alonso's got no car at the moment, the poor thing being a McLaren particularly, with the Honda engine, unfortunately, has let them down, and he's not competitive. But these three at the present time are probably the best drivers. But so is Ricciardo, very good, and there's so many young kids coming along. Verstappen, for example, just at 19, doing tremendous things. So the sport is terrific, and Lewis has attracted another dimension because he's a kind of rock star, more than perhaps. Well, in the days of myself and, you know, Fittipaldi and I with the long hair and all that sort of stuff, and it was the swinging 60s and Carnaby Street and fashion and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, since then it sort of, I don't know, went down to a sort of normal kind of activity, whereas now Lewis, I think, relit that light. And he's a prominent driver today, and he's used heavily promotionally, etc. So he's a top driver, whereas Vettel, on the other hand, is every bit as good, and some people may say even better. But, of course, he's a quiet, modest Austrian who isn't quite as, you know, German-Austrian like Jochen Rindt was, not quite as exciting, if you like, as some of the others, the Italians like in the past, Bandini, and way before that, Ascari and Villaresi and all these guys. So the public need an exciting figure, and they've got it in Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, he's not bad, is he? Couple of things, so Jackie, to wrap up here, as far as you are concerned here in terms of your career. Do you still get behind the wheel? And if I put you on a racetrack, would you be quick, Sir Jackie?
Quick at getting out of the car again. No, I drove a Formula One car not too long ago, a new one. I'll be driving a Formula One car at Goodwood very shortly, because Goodwood still has this, the Festival of Speed and the Revival, and I go back and drive, never very fast. I mean, I never, you know, really go to any close limits. I'm not at that age to do that, and I've got no illusions about that. But I enjoy occasionally getting into a Formula One car. But, you know, I'm in it for 5 minutes and I think, hey, what am I doing in here? I love the sport. I adore the sport. And it's got bigger and better since my day. And I like what's going on today. We're reaching the public better than we've ever done before. And some of the companies that I'm involved in are doing just that I've brought into the sport, such as Heineken. And, you know, that's good because it's going to everybody now. It's reaching not just the hardcore Formula One enthusiasts. Now it's men, women, and children who are going to Grand Prix as family units. And that wasn't happening in my day. And it is now because there's more attractions, more things to do, and better food and refreshments to have around the racetrack, etc. So it's a bigger sport than it's ever been. It's a better sport than it's ever been in my mind. I don't look over my shoulder thinking it was better in those days. It wasn't. it is what it is today.
And yeah.
Currently, I think it's the best it's ever been.
I remember the Richard Hammond episode on Top Gear. Do you see that where he tried to have a drive of a Formula One car and he couldn't get the tyres up to speed and couldn't get the thing going? Is it like that, Sir Jackie, that if you put 99.9% of the human race behind the wheel of a modern Formula One car, they'd have no chance?
Absolutely no chance. He's a nice man and he's a good television guy, but he's not a Formula One Grand Prix driver. You know,
yeah.
There's, you know, millions of people drive race cars. Millions of people around the world have licenses to drive cars, but you know, there's only 20 Formula One drivers on the grid, and of those 20, there's probably only 6 that are really good. And out of those 6, there's probably only 3 that are exceptional, and at any one time, generally, only 1 genius. So the sport has been made very attractive by those sort of statistics. And that's why, you know, people who you say, oh, he drives or she drives very well, when they get into a Formula One car, that's a new game altogether. And to do that today, you've got to be starting karting at 7 or 8 years of age seriously and staying with it until you get into a single seater with a big engine like a Formula One, and look at what's happened with Verstappen at 19 years of age. That's the sort of thing that makes everybody want to come and see a Grand Prix.
Yeah, and that's the only reason, Sir Jackie, I hear people saying, oh, it's way too early to be starting our Kiwi kids at 12 getting their racing licenses. Sir Jackie, if they don't start at 12, they're never going to make it in the world scene. That's just how tough it is now.
I don't think there's certainly no driver in Formula One today that hasn't been karting since, I would say, 8 years of age.
Yeah, it's amazing. Hey, I'll leave you with this. We need to get you back to New Zealand. There's a bloke called Tony Quinn who made his money. He's an ex-Scotsman, by the way, Jackie. Made his money out of...
Well, then he's starting off with a big advantage.
Well, you'll love this. So he made his money out of pet food. This is 1994 in Australia. Now come to New Zealand. He built himself his own racetrack down in the South Island, and it's got components of Nürburgring as part of it. So you drive through the forest, Sir Jackie. We need to get you over here. Some of the tracks in New Zealand at the moment, you would enjoy, my friend.
Well, I'd love it. And I'd love to come back to New Zealand. I haven't been down there for years. Ironically, I'm going tomorrow, Saturday, my time tomorrow, to the Nürburgring to celebrate its 90th year since its inception, since it was built. And, you know, that was the granddaddy of them all to drive, but it was so damn dangerous I had to close it as the leader at that time of the safety campaign in Formula One. You know, for this gentleman to have done that down in your country, I think it's a great thing to have done. And I'd love to see the racetrack, and I'd love to come back to New Zealand sometime. That's great that he's built something as unusual as that, because the Nürburgring, well, it was the granddaddy of them all.
Mate, it has been so good to have you on the program. Honestly, Sir Jackie, I love watching back through the footage of you, as I said, back in the 60s, 70s, when you were just, as I mentioned, just the absolute rock star. You've done so much with your career. As I said, post your racing times, those 3 world titles, you should be incredibly proud of what you have achieved. One day we'll see you back down here in New Zealand, sir.
Well, maybe Heineken will bring me down.
Do you want me to negotiate that for you, Sir Jackie?
Yeah, I'll leave that to you. You can be my Heineken agent in New Zealand.
Mate, I love it. You take care, and then you enjoy going back to Germany, mate. Thank you so much for having you on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you.